What I want to talk about today, we've got some wonderful folks here. First, let me introduce myself, Hudson Talbot. I am proud to say that I am a Radio Council member. I'm one of the folks who helped start this place, and I'm so excited. It's just great. And finally, to be in the majority in a room is great. I have got my kindred spirits, my fellow authors and children's book lovers here today. They're all here among many folks who are coming in for this wonderful event that we have. We should all be proud of this in Hudson, the Hudson Children's Book Festival. In 3 short years, it has become one of the, shall we say, major marquee names in children's books, Children Book Festival. I think it's the biggest children's book fair in New York State and going national very quickly. So I have here today 3 folks with me this hour. Mr. Bruce Hopkins, who's originally local, now lives in Iowa. Is that right, Bruce?
I live in Sioux City, Iowa.
Now. Sioux City, Iowa. And we're going to be talking in a minute about one of your books and several, if we have a chance, When the Foxes Wore Red Vests. And I'm so glad you're with us because it's a book of poetry, and I would love you to talk a little bit about the importance of poetry in all of our lives, but certainly kids' lives. And then Katie Davis, the lovely, delightful Katie Davis, who doesn't really need us. She's got her own show on her podcast.
It's not a real studio like this one.
And she brought, it's author of many, many books. Wonderful one that she brought today that we're featuring is Little Chicken's Big Day. So Katie will be talking about that in a second. And right next to me is the wonderful, exciting Teresa Moran, the PR director of the Hudson Children's Book Fair. So welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
For us all to be here. This is really exciting for me to get an opportunity to talk about our work, the importance of our work, and our festival in particular. Teresa, it's just so wonderful that this is happening right here in Hudson. So maybe you could start us off and talk a little bit about how this came about, when did you come into it, and how it got to where it is today.
Fantastic. Well, it started 3 years ago, and actually a little bit before the very first festival, and it was a thought of Eric Looper and Lisa Dolan. Mm-hmm. And Eric Looper is also another author, one of our authors that has come all 3 years. And
I'm a vet too, by the way.
I've been to all 3. I know. Yes. I know. Lisa Dolan is one of our coordinators. Mm-hmm. For the festival and directors. And Lisa and Eric had been talking at an author visit when Eric had come to the middle school at in Hudson. Mm-hmm. And they had spoken about the idea of a book festival and bringing more authors in, and Lisa takes off on many ideas and she goes flying with them, and thank goodness she did with this. Just had a great idea. They moved forward. 50 authors we had our first year, 100 authors the second year, and this year we have, I believe the count is 113 authors and illustrators.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Well, and I understand now they're coming in from all over the place. Well, obviously Bruce came in from Iowa.
Yes.
Do you have other long distance authors coming in?
We do. I'm not quite sure exactly where. I know that we do have a few that are flying in, mm-hmm. and Connecticut, Massachusetts, Philadelphia area.
New Jersey.
New Jersey. And definitely a lot from New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So they're from all over, and as well as local authors.
Well,
from
speaking
this area.
Of which, haven't you found that this area is incredibly rich in local?
Crazy. Albany.
Yes.
Area. There's tons of people.
Albany, all the way up and down the Hudson Valley.
Right. For sure.
Some wonderful, brilliant talent just right here. It's.
And they're hiding.
They're not on purpose. We're bringing them out.
It's fantastic to, you know, once you start to look into, you know, where people are, and it's amazing, you know, the talent, like you said, that we have right here in this area. especially here in the Hudson Valley.
Well, speaking for one of the many who live here, it's sort of like a perfect situation. You know, it's like if you're into gardening, you know how certain plants just love exactly mm-hmm. the right location. For children's book authors and illustrators, it's like you can be near the city, but you don't have to be in the city.
Exactly.
You know?
Hey, be careful there.
I still part-time in the city. I love it. I'll never be anything but a New Yorker. But it's so wonderful to be up here because, you know, as a children's book author, you can really sit anywhere in the world these days.
Yeah. Right.
And it's just nice to be sitting in the Hudson Valley, as far as I'm concerned.
Beautiful
for sure.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about your job in particular?
Sure. This year is a little bit less available this year because I'm not teaching in Hudson this year. Mm-hmm. But for the last 2 years, I've been the festival coordinator and worked very closely with Lisa, speaking with authors on a regular basis, coordinating all the different activities that happen, setting the schedule, communicating back and forth, getting, all the authors' biographies and different things that we need from them. This year, I was really excited, even though I'm not right there in Hudson, I've still been able to take part in the festival. Mm-hmm. I was thinking that I wasn't going to, and mm-hmm. then it was coming closer and closer to the festival, and I emailed Lisa and Maria Suttmeyer, our other director, and mm-hmm. said, I need to be part of the yeah. festival. I can't be without it. It can't happen without me. So
let me stop you. Where does that come from? Where that motivation? Because I see it in all three of you.
Oh yeah.
Clearly in Lisa
yeah.
and Maria too. there's some kind of this obviously isn't about the big bucks, right? For the three of you.
Well,
you're teachers.
What are you talking about?
You're teachers.
You know, the thing is that that everyone part of the festival, everyone that is part of the festival, is doing it because they love it.
Absolutely.
And
just like children's books.
This
exactly.
is it, isn't
basically,
it?
Basically, it really is.
We're in good company here.
Yes.
This is all about labor of love. Right.
Right? Yes,
that's
absolutely.
The name of the
for
game.
For sure. I mean, you know, the authors that are coming, out of the graciousness of their hearts and coming, because they want to share their love for reading and for literacy. And you know, between the three of us, we live for this excitement every year. Mm. You know, we start talking about it, the day after it happens. And, we start planning for the next one. And
I would think the kids get really excited about it too.
Yeah. They really do. And especially when we get them more involved in mm-hmm. Doing different things, like last year we had kids singing a song right at the festival, and we might even have something like that this year as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this year the junior high kids made their own song,
mm-hmm.
which is amazing. A lot of work that went into it. And with the great help of Mary Lou Knoll. And when they have a buy-in and they have a part of it, they get very excited by it too.
And do you see a difference, or have you all felt a difference in what they come away with, the kids, to have this much focus on books and children's literature and all that?
The kids really get excited to be able to meet authors.
Mm-hmm.
I just say what your son said.
Oh, my son is he's 5, and every year he gets so excited, like amazingly excited about the festival. Like he's like, he tells everyone about it. We're going to the book festival, and people are I live in Colony, so they're like, the book festival, what are you talking about? And my mom's book festival,
It's so great.
I have to tell you, I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, go ahead.
But I did a contest on my website, and this woman sent in a video. One of it was like sending a video of a kid saying, "I hear you clucking, big chicken." And this woman sent in her son in all these different places saying, "I hear you clucking, big chicken," and she won. Uh-huh. And she tweeted me today saying, this early this morning, saying that she was going to be coming to the book festival, and her son said, "Mama, are authors real people?" And can you imagine this kid tomorrow? He's going to be freaking
amazed.
Out. He's going to be so excited. And this excitement will ripple out into the rest of his life, meeting
right.
authors, and the love of books and reading will ripple out. And that's what happens. And you guys have inculcated these kids into the gospel of kidlit.
That's
great. And that is really, really valuable to their entire lives.
Yeah, it really is. And, you just see that, at least I see with my son, that, he'll... he'll open a book that we get from the book festival, and he'll be like, I met her, you know, like, well, I know. She signed this for me, and she told me the whole story, you know, and, like, so excited by it.
Well, speaking of, I hear you clucking, Miss Katie. So stay right where you are, Teresa, because I want to go to Katie now.
Hi,
Hudson. Hi, Katie. So glad you're here with us.
I'm so glad to be here.
Oh, gosh. Everybody, you've got to come to this festival just to see and meet these wonderful, brilliant personalities.
It is the most amazing festival. And I have to say, I've done a lot of festivals. And first, I want to say, when you picked me up today at the train station, I came up early. My husband, who wrote Little Chicken's Big Day, is coming up later because he has to work a day job. Mm-hmm. And so you picked me up, and I completely lost what my train of thought was. It was about the book festival.
You'll say something else, brilliant.
We can't edit this out, can we? Like, on my podcast, I go like, oh, I blew that. I'm just going to take that out so nobody knows what an idiot I am. I don't know what it was. But why don't you ask me something different?
Well.
Now everybody's going to want to come and see me like, who's that idiot on the radio? Oh, that's the one.
No, I'm going to demand that they come and see you. I'm going to charge money to.
Thank goodness they can't see I'm turning red right now. No,
it's fun. Well, we have so many wonderful people there. It is a great opportunity for the kids, our constituency, to meet us, the authors.
Basically, I was just going to say, when I'm doing all of these book festivals, I've done them all over the country. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was going to say, is that you said, remember last year when you gave me some suggestions and I couldn't remember for a second? And I said, oh my gosh, that's right. I didn't remember what I said, but they were things that I've just learned and that authors know, like, provide Sharpies. You know, like, things like that that are not high cost but are really, really, really valuable to us. Mm-hmm. And that was something that you guys were really open to. And not every festival is open to that, and or festival committee people.
Right.
And so that is something that I, as an author, really, really appreciate, is your openness. Another festival that is like that is one in the South, the Savannah Children's Book Festival. They also were like you guys a few years ago, just starting up, and they also do it up big like you. I mean, there are so many book festivals where, and it's hard because they're every, like you said, labor of love, and there's not a big budget.
Well, I wanted to also hear from you guys what it's like from our point of view, from the author's point of view, getting a chance, an opportunity to meet our audience, because so folks come in, they're starstruck, they see all the big names, the Katie Davises, the Bruce Hopkins, but it's, I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us. I just want to give a quick example of my first experience of that, with my very first book, 1,000 years ago, at one of the Nevada State blah blah award, whatever it was, and so I flew out to Reno, and they had two kids there who had their school had perfect attendance. There was 5 in the school. It was a ranch school, and they had driven about 4 hours to come give me this award. And the idea of me sitting in my little farmhouse out in the country in upstate New York in the Hudson Valley, being able to do a book and get it published and going out all over the place, God knows where, reaching these kids in this remote place at virtually the other end of the earth, was just an amazing experience for me. And that's always stuck with me.
Yes, it is an amazing thing that when you go somewhere and somebody says, I know that book. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, you do? You know my book? It's sort of like sending your kids out when they're little. You send them out and you find out that they did something that you didn't know about, like at school or whatever. And you're like, really? And before, you'd always known everything. And same thing with the book. You know everything about your book. And then it goes out into the world.
Yeah.
You give birth to the book, and then it has to make its way.
Right.
And then you meet the people it affects, and it's heartrending and rewarding, and it makes everything that we do in our little, I always say, in our little mole holes. We work in our little mole holes, and sometimes we pop our head out, and these like festivals go, oh, look, there are the other moles. And there are people who like us, too.
Well, let's talk about your work a little bit. Now, you have, I think this is part of a series, the Little Chicken?
No, it's my 9th book, but it's the first book I only illustrated. It's the first book I've collaborated on. Uh-huh. And boy, was it a nightmare, that author. What a nightmare. Oops, no, never mind. That was my husband. I forgot. we only had 4 or 500.
Where is he in our listening area yet?
Not yet. That's why I'm saying it.
Yeah.
No, we actually only had one major fight about it. And I don't remember what it was, but it was something that neither of us wanted to change. I can't remember, but
was that your first collaboration?
It was.
And
yes,
you're
really
still
fun.
Speaking to each other. That's a good sign.
Most days, yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was really, really fun to work together. We worked together on all my books because he is a feature animation producer.
Uh-huh.
So he produced the movie Robots. Do you know that movie?
Uh-huh.
And
sure.
He worked on Ice Age, and he even worked on Toy Story back in the day. Iron Giant, and there was a few, and he'll be there tomorrow, so all those people who like those movies should come to the book festival.
Well, I like the book that you brought in, particularly because I really wanted to have as broad a cross-section as possible. This book is clearly for younger readers and
mm-hmm.
pre-readers,
mm-hmm.
and Bruce's is for, I would say, older kids, and it's poetry, so... You know, just a great smorgasbord of books that everybody's going to find tomorrow. So I wanted to just ask you a little bit about your motivation here. And is this sort of the age group that you like to write for, or was it just kind of a one-off?
He wrote it.
Yeah.
But
you probably had a little say in it.
I had something to say. Actually, Jerry always teases me because I really like to point out that I changed the last line. And I can't help it because I really feel like I feel proud of it because I felt like I gave a contribution to the story. And he's done that for me a million times.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I can't even tell you how many times he's done that for all my books because
uh-huh.
he knows that arc of the story. And he also guided me on the illustration. I mean, he didn't do the illustrations, but he said, you know, I think this needs to be this or farther away, or what if he looks a little more worried, or what, you know, things like that.
Well, it's going to be different in your case, but I know people always ask me, I've illustrated for two other authors, Jackie Woodson and
mm-hmm.
Gene Fritz. God,
right,
I can't
believe it.
Only like the grand dame of
right,
children's
right, right.
literature, and I couldn't remember her last name. Anyway, but people always ask me, and I want to ask you this, what it's like to illustrate somebody else's work, and are they telling you what to do, and how does that happen? It's a big question for me whenever I just illustrate.
And it is different since I live with the author.
Yeah.
so he could tell me what to do all the time, but I don't listen. but you know, when the genesis of the story is a really great tale, or the
uh-huh.
genesis of the book story is a great story, because what happened was he kept saying to me that there was this guy at his office who worked for him, and every time he'd say, hey, you know, we need the art for the next big meeting on Wednesday or whatever, the guy would go, yeah, I hear you clucking, big chicken. And he would always say that, and Jerry for like 2 years would say, Katie, you should write this book. It's definitely a children's book in there. Yeah, you know, I hear you clucking, big chicken. It's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. You know, I'd be like, yeah, I hear you clucking, big chicken. You write it.
Uh-huh.
So eventually he did. And he sent it to me, and then 2 seconds later, I was at a book festival in Florida, and he sent it to me, and 2 seconds later, before I even had a chance to open it, he said, don't open it, because you know that scary feeling when you write something, and you're like, no, don't read it. So I said, okay, I didn't read it. So for one time, I actually did listen to him, and I didn't read it, and then like a month later, he said, did you ever read that story I wrote? I said, no, you told me not to read it. And he said, you listen? And then he said, okay, read it. And I read it, and I was so excited. I was in the middle of cooking dinner. I you know, stopped. I opened up my computer. I looked at it. And then I said, be right back. Out to my studio. Didn't come back. Dinner's ruined. You know, he's whatever, making mac and cheese for the kids. I'm in there sketching. Papers flying. And I come back in with a dummy. And I have that dummy now that I show at school visits, because it really shows... It's how much it changed, yet how much really stayed the same, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that...
And kids love that, don't they, when you show them in school?
Yeah, and grown-ups like it, too.
Oh, everybody.
Yeah,
everybody,
things,
it's like a magic thing of, like, how a book comes to be.
Yeah. And it was a really interesting process, too, because I'd never, believe it or not, it's my ninth book, I've never worked with an art director. And that was... I know, right? Isn't that weird? And, I mean, I worked with them to the point of them saying, do you like this font? But never somebody saying, this spread should be this way, or I think this is the palette we should use, things like that. I'd never experienced that.
So for folks just tuning in, I just want to remind everybody who we are and what we're doing here in the wonderful WGHC studio. I'm here with Katie Davis and Bruce Hopkins and Teresa Moran. Katie and Bruce are here for the Hudson Children's Book Festival, and we have a representative, a PR director, Teresa Morand, here with us. And so, Katie, I would like to ask you at this point if you would like to read a little bit from the book that you're talking about.
Don't ask me twice.
Okay.
Okay, so it's called Little Chicken's Big Day, and the book opens up with a big chicken hand opening a door, and little chicken's in the bed, yawning, and he's saying, and you just see rise and shine. This is all mama telling little chicken to do stuff. Wash your face, brush your teeth, get dressed. Little chicken says, I hear you clucking, big chicken. Mama says, finish your food, time to go. Buckle up. Now by now they're in the car, and he's sort of a little annoyed because he already knows how to buckle up. He says, I hear you clucking, big chicken. She says, follow me. And she's off with her red pumps in her handbag, and he's trying to keep up. He sees a butterfly, and she says, hold my hand, stay close. And she's off. She, you know, she's doing her errands and everything, and he's distracted by the butterfly. And he's starting to play with the butterfly and kind of looking at the butterfly and everything, and all of a sudden he realizes he hasn't heard Big Chicken clucking at him in a while, and he gets a little worried, and he says, Big Chicken? And of course, Mama, you turn the page, and of course, Mama has been watching him the whole time. He's like off in his little own little world, like so many kids. And she says, Little Chicken! And he's so relieved, and he says, I hear you clucking, Big Chicken! And of course, he runs to her, and he hugs her leg in the international sign of, You are my mama. And then they do all the things, it's all a big silent spread, and they do all the things together that he did alone. And then she sees him yawn, she says, Let's go home. And then, of course, we have a cuddle story time. And then she's kissing him goodnight. Sweet dreams, sleep tight. And now we're in his darkened room where we started in the light room, her waking him up. And he says, I love you, Mama. And she's just closing the door. And she says, I hear you clucking, little chicken.
Oh, it's sweet. Now, I wish everybody could see this. It's I love it because it's so bold and simple and graphic. And it's going to be perfect for pre-readers, like the 3 to 5 year olds probably, who just love the pictures. They don't need to know what the words mean as long as they've got Mama
read,
Chicken
right,
reading
right.
to them.
You can totally
or
see
Papa.
It, right? You can totally see what's happening from the pictures without knowing the words.
Yeah,
that's true. And so,
but the clucking with the big chicken
is
definitely, it's great to hear it too.
Oh, and I got tattoos tomorrow. Come to the festival. Your little chicken will get his or her own little chicken tattoo. It says, I hear you clucking, big chicken.
So now I want to ask you, do you have kids of your own?
I do.
Oh, so you've got some...
they're big chickens now.
They're big chickens?
15 and 17.
Oh, wow.
I never know
that. But you do have a little bit of on-hand experience, hands-on experience.
Yes,
is what I
do.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, so because it feels a little bit in the reading of it, I can hear... There's some methodology going on here.
I have dragged my children onto errands, like, come on, hurry up. Now it's like I try to slow down because they're growing up so fast.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Jerry wrote it, and he's the one who was always...
Oh, sorry, that's my little theme music. I should have turned that off.
I said, did everyone turn off their phone before we started? the host himself.
Yeah.
But Jerry's the one who got... his mom was always being paged in the department store, apparently. and our son was lost once at SeaWorld, no less, where I thought that I would have a heart attack because he was lost for 12 minutes. And somebody was watching him for us for a minute while we, you know, went to see the dolphins. And when we came back, we're like, where's Benny? What do you mean? I'm like, you said you were watching him. And I was screaming, you know. So this, I relive it every time I read this book. And he... he did the same thing.
Wow. Well, great. Well, speaking of true to life, I want to move on now quickly to Bruce Hopkins, because you've got a beautiful book of poetry. I got a chance to glimpse at it just before the show. And it's all about your love of nature and your heritage and your background. And I know your family, and I know how close your brother was to nature.
Yeah, this book really was a product of work that my brother Barry, who was a Catskill teacher, and 10 years in the making, and we worked on it and through all kinds of... he was New York's Art Teacher of the Year. He was New York's Environmental Educator of the Year. We worked those conferences. We did
wonderful
many art
guy.
Shows.
Famous guy in Catskill. People really... remember very, very fondly. He affected so many lives.
Well, he was my brother, but he was also one explosively interesting human being.
Mm-hmm.
And his daughter took the pictures for this book and worked with it on it along with my wife. So it's a work of love. Mm-hmm. We also brought, and I'll go back to that quickly. I brought my wife's book, Jeanette Hopkins, and she's a children's author. And so far, probably in the last year and a half, we've worked with 30,000 kids in over 175 school districts in the United States, including New York, New Jersey, and the Upper Midwest and Texas.
Wonderful,
and
so, doing school visits.
Working with grade school children for the most part, and mm-hmm. every once in a while, we work in universities with graduate students. And a comment was made earlier, and it couldn't have been more right on. There's such tremendous interest when you sit down with kids with what does the illustrator do? What does the writer do? How do you get published? Mm-hmm. How do you put the book together? Why is your book published in Canada? How does that happen? And what goes on? So, it opens up a whole new world, not only in the context of the writing that we all think about, but in the context of the possibilities of other things that they can do. Lots of little kids who sit around and scribble in class and get their knuckles wrapped, who are wonderful illustrators, and feeling like no one is paying any attention. Suddenly they have a book that's just so precious. And so anyway, Barry and I are working on this book, and my wife, Jeanette, we have a perspective that we bring to everything we do. And it really is a sense of place perspective. It's a perspective about how community, in the broadest context of it, the environmental definition of those terms.
Well, and that phrase really resonates for us Catskill folks, because your brother started a very important program in school that I think still goes on to this day called A Greater Sense of Place.
That's correct. Yes, he did.
And do I understand that the work in this book sort of has a feeling of that, about appreciating your environment?
This book is about growing up in the Catskill Mountains, and it's a collection of essays. And the essays, what I have found about the essays, as well as the poems and the pictures that are in the book, is that they resonate with people at the emotive level. I mean, at the level of their own lives. And for example, there's a line in this book that it wasn't an accident and it got changed in the writing. But the line originally said, "Women in my family have shot at least two men, but they both deserved it."
That's great.
Now you got to admit, that's a great line.
Oh, it's terrific.
And it's true. I mean, it's to its word true.
Now, they deserve it.
They deserve it. The importance of the line is that we have a whole part of American history that we don't talk about and we don't report on, and that is we're in the middle of World War II, and we have most age-eligible kind of men fighting the war. So we have little kids running families. I mean, literally, little kids are being sent out to run errands. They're 8 years old. They're the oldest child in the family, and mom suddenly makes the little man grow up in a hurry, or the little boy grow up in a hurry. Behind that are the hobos who are traveling the rails, and the door-to-door salesmen are coming door-to-door. So women are suddenly confronted with all kinds of men who are not off fighting the war, because they can't be off fighting the war for their part. And they have to be able to protect themselves. So the message in that for me is that I could not be prouder of the women in my family who in both instances resorted to what they knew how to do. And then the book itself is about it's about growing up in the mountains, and it's about those life experiences that kids have when you grow up in the mountains, close to the mountains and close to the earth.
Well, I love the title, and maybe you could tell us how the title developed, because it for me it really does what a title's supposed to do, When the Foxes Wore Red Vests, because it makes me curious. It makes me want to open it up and see, okay, what's he talking about here? What is this, a kid's book? Is it a YA? Who's it for? And it's got me. Well, that's what a good title does, I think.
It's a great title. We were fighting over titles. I mean, we're having meetings. We're having these production meetings. And Steve Simkin, who is our editor of Rice Cube Press, called me one night and said, "I have the perfect title." And I said, "Okay, what is it?" And he then went, he gave me the title, As It Sits, When Foxes Wore Red Vests. Mm-hmm. Foxes is an essay in the book, and it's a very important essay because it basically says to people that mountain people, we name every rock, we name every hole in the wall, we name every tree, we name every stream, every turn in the stream. I had to get past Spook Rock to get to the one-room school I went to, when I was I'm a cross-country runner because of Spook Rock. Mm-hmm. I started running, 300 yards before it, kept running 300 yards, and without knowing what Spook Rock was about. But all of those names and symbolisms, and I called a 90-year-old lady when I was writing the book and said, "Tell me about folk myths." Knew exactly where I was going. She said, if it happens to you, and we're now talking about the raven, the myth of the raven foretelling death, the foretelling of death. And she said to me, if it happens to you, it's not a myth. I've never forgotten that sentence. Isn't that a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant sentence?
Yeah.
So the essay itself is about a set of circumstances where my brother had just died, I had a cousin die, and within a few days period of time, three boys in our family died because we could not get penicillin up here in the late 40s. And they're all buried in Woodstock, by the way, in that artist cemetery. Mm. I'm listening to the doctor who had come to the house talk about me dying. And first of all, he's trying to convince my mother that it's a good idea because it's, you know, he's running his high fever for so long. He's not going to be normal. And that's the part, by the way, I really love about it. I subscribe to that. I think I'm not normal because of that discussion. Decided not to be. But the other thing I decided was I didn't like the conversation between the adults in my life, and I opted out of it. Mm-hmm. So I listened to the whippoorwills, and the whippoorwills in the mountains were making that lovely call whippoorwills make. And then I went into a deep coma. And in the deep coma, I met this red fox with a red vest and blue pantaloons and gold buttons and a cocked hat and a big feather. And he was sitting on a hemlock stump and smoking a pipe, a big old British pipe. And he just said very quietly over and over and over again, don't listen to them. Adults say things you need not listen to. You're going to be fine. Mm. Now, the interesting part of it in metaphysical terms is when I regained consciousness, no longer had a fever. I no longer had pneumonia. And I've taken that plus other incidents in my life. And when I work with kids and speak to kids, I say to them in parts that you can't totally trust adults. We believe too much in work.
Well, you know, I'm sure every kid can relate to that. But the content, what you're talking about, the substance of this, a lot of folks would say, that doesn't sound like a kid's book. How do you feel about that? I mean, I think it is because I know that kids are hungry for stuff that they're not supposed to be interested in like this.
Well, I think middle school kids particularly don't want the world to make so much sense. Mm-hmm. We're in this business now with it, particularly in schools where we talk about standards and benchmarks and testing and everything's factual and everything's cognitive. And we got little kids dying in the midst of that who want to use their imagination and their creativity, and they're sitting there drawing whatever it is they're drawing, you know. Mm-hmm. And that changes for generations of kids. But what hasn't changed is the immense need to be able to do that and to, you know, really be a imaginative people.
Uh-huh. I wonder if I could ask you to read a little bit from it. Do you have anything selected that we could hear?
I would love to do that.
Great. Thank you.
I'm going to talk just a little bit about from the introduction itself.
Sure.
My childhood in the woods and with nature supported a bonded relationship which nurtured me. Just prior to his death in 2008, my younger brother Barry wrote to me about the sense of awe that we experience as we view nature and the absolute necessity of that experience. When I visit Glenford, cresting the Ohio Mountain Road from Woodstock, the lower basin of the Ashokan Reservoir unfolds in the foreground, fronted by the community of Glenford and much of the Glenford Woods. This vista is illustrative of the beauty common to the Catskills, embracing all of the communities of the Ashokan Reservoir, both natural and man-made. Mountain meadows and forests coexist with small acreages and carefully placed stone walls in the magnificent panorama laid out before our eyes. I have experienced such awe in many natural settings in America, from New England to the Sand Hills of Nebraska, the Black Hills of South Dakota, the Lusk Hills of Iowa, where my wife, children's author Jeanette Hopkins, and I now live. As our language and impulses come from nature, so does our sense of beauty, empathy, and affection.
Nice. Thank you. So, I could just continue to hear you all talk and read. Why don't we take a little break now? Is that good with you, Tom? And then we'll come back and all three of us will have a little bit of a conversation about the state of children's books today.
Excellent.
Free. Ooh. a story, watch it unfold. So many tales to be told. Ooh, there's nothing you can't do. There's nothing you can't be. When you find yourself inside a book,
the best is yet to be.
Nothing you can't do.
There's nothing you can't be.
When you find yourself inside a book, the rest is history. Be delighted at the things you'll learn. Get on the road and take a right turn.
Keep on reading to reach the top. Open a book and never stop.
Ooh, there's nothing you can't do. There's nothing you can't be. When you find yourself inside a book, the best is yet to be.
Yourself inside a book,
the rest is history.
Open your mind, get a good education. The seeds of a book are a good foundation. Learning is fun, it becomes contagious when you open a book and read all the pages. Your brain yearns to learn every day because it's smart. It knows pure intelligence connected to your heart. So next time you see your favorite book on the shelf, read it, get rich, cause knowledge is wealth.
There's nothing you can do, there's nothing you can be. When you find yourself inside a book, the rest is yet to be. There's nothing you can do, there's nothing you can be. When you find yourself inside a book, the rest is history. There's nothing you can do.
WGXC founding underwriting support is provided by Rip Van Winkle Tobacco Free Action of Columbia and Greene Counties, working to reduce cigarette and tobacco marketing in and around stores for kids' sake. TobaccoFreeNYS.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Homespun Occasions, old-time square and contra dancing with caller and live fiddle music for special events, community celebrations, and school programs. www.homespun.biz or 1-800-908-HOME.
Oops. You're listening to the WGXC Afternoon Show, and I'm Tom Rudd. That was Inside a Book that we heard before, this song that was recorded. Teresa, do you know, we haven't gotten official credits on that. Pamela Badilla just brought it over Monday, the song. I think I've been told it was Hudson Middle School students or Hudson High School students. You don't know who?
I believe it was Hudson Junior High students, and they were under the direction of Mary Lou Knoll, who is the junior high choral teacher.
And that was recorded at the Riverfront Studios, the church here a block away with Henry Hirsch. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we'll take Hudson continue this conversation here now.
Okay, great. Well, this is it's great to have this luxury of time. You never get this when you do a radio interview, but that's the way we like things here at WGXC. What I'd like to talk about now is our thoughts collectively and individually about where you think children's books and books in general are going right now. We're in a state, as we all know, of enormous transition, to be diplomatic about it. Certainly the form seems to be changing, and it's incumbent upon us as authors and educators to go along with the changes as best we can to sort of fit ourselves into it. Some of us are jumping into it a lot quicker than others. It depends. I know, Katie, you said that you're a real tech geek, so you must have a facility with it. But anyway, it's actually a really exciting time, I think, right now, because we just nobody knows really. The publishers don't know. Nobody, the teachers, the educators, the certainly the authors are the last to know ever what's going to happen. I think my gut feeling is that authors will be okay because they'll always need content. We are now content providers.
That's right.
But let me hear your thoughts about where you, the way you feel about what's going on right now with the transition into electronic media.
You know, I'm part of a blog, a coalition of published authors and illustrators, and we created a blog called E is for Book. E is an electronic. Uh-huh. E is for book.com. And we're all providing blog posts based on our experiences in dipping our toes into this. And some people, we're all at different experience levels, and we're all at different levels of involvement at this point. It's a really interesting thing to read and see if you're interested in it. But for me, at first I was like, no one's ever going to want to cuddle up with a machine. And my feeling has changed. And I have to say, you know, I think that you're right, that we are content providers, and that we will have to watch our contracts, because the publishers now are savvy to the fact that digital rights are something that we want to hold on to if we want to make a, you know, an application or an ebook out of an out of print book. There's no such thing as out of print anymore, frankly. Yeah. I mean, you can turn your work into something and something else. The other thing is, I mean, it's just interesting the differences between, like, what is the difference between an app and an ebook? And there are all kinds of things being explored as to, some books are better with the less, fewer bells and whistles. Mm-hmm. That's just a book, but it's electronic. Some become more game-like. Mm-hmm. Some people are believing that the more things you touch and move and slide and swipe that get the kid involved in the book, the better. And I just read something in the New York Times the other day, and I'll probably mangle this, but I'm going to try to give you the gist of it, was that somebody was saying, well, you know, and I thought 200 years seemed too recent, but what do I know? 200 years ago, people were just as upset about the new technology that was going to ruin society, and the new technology were called books. Mm-hmm. And that people were now, and the article was about how everybody was together but separate, because everyone's sitting in their living room. One kid's on the iPhone, the mom is on her iPad, the dad's on his, you know, computer, the daughter's on whatever, her blueberry, as I call it. And we're all in these different virtual worlds. And people thought the same thing. Everybody was in the parlor room reading their separate books in these virtual worlds, mm-hmm. that of our imagination. And for the first time, women were thinking things that nobody else knew. Well, like, I didn't get that sentence, really, because we were thinking things before that anyway. but
you were,
they
thinking
were,
already.
But basically, women were, the point of the quote was that women were suddenly reading books and involved in worlds that they had not been allowed to be involved in before. Mm-hmm. And so people were all freaking out about it then. And now we're just at another stage. And I do think there have been stories told since humans evolved into humans from, mm-hmm. tadpoles or whatever. So, little monkey simian tadpoles. But whatever it is, I mean, we've always been.
Teresa, I would love to hear from an educator's point of view, and also, clearly, you all as I'm sorry, I'm from Kentucky. That's why I keep saying you all. why you have a book festival? So it's still like there are actual paper books, yeah. bound books. Mm-hmm. You know, what are your thoughts about it?
You know, there's a couple things. First, I think, you know, from being a parent and seeing my son, and also my daughter now that she's three, and so she's really getting into, she wants to read the books as well. but we have an iPad at home, and we've used ebooks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they love that just as much as they love, you know, the hard copy, you know. So it's
my
it's,
agent said to me what when she said it, it was a little frightening, because I said, you know, this was already about a year ago, like, there's going to be this thing about, you know, turning a page between the parent and the child. And she said, you got to understand,
it's just a swipe.
5-year-olds are more comfortable with the screen than they are with the page now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people from my generation sort of like have to accept that. Mm-hmm. That's
that's
just what it is.
Yeah, and I don't think that it'll ever be a lost art. I think it'll be something that, you know, you continue to hold on to. Mm-hmm. But it's just another aspect of it.
There's another form of reading.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And
well, it's a deeper form of affection though. You know, when I went into a town, we were talking earlier about the town that had just been hit by the tornado. Mm-hmm. And I found that the kids were so deeply attached to what they were reading and so deeply attached to books that the books were comforting. And so it's about three things strike me. One is the definition of classical and whether or not there is such a thing as classical children's literature or classical ideas and how they're carried out. Of course, they can be carried out electronically as well as they can in book form. But kids love books. Kids love books signed by their favorite authors. Our niece is coming up here from New Jersey and coming to this festival, and she already has a list. She's been online finding out. There's the electronic part of it, everything going on in this festival. And she's coming here to have a non-electronic experience.
That's
wonderful. So I think if we figure out the intimacy part of books, what is it that really does speak to kids? Our grandchildren are very literate, as most children are, in technology. But we find that there are times they come in our door, they want a journal, first of all, which we haven't talked a lot about. But Jeanette and I believe that journaling is infinitely tied to writing.
Absolutely.
And the mining of information and the ability to get your arms around it, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but we find our grandchildren, when they come through the door, they don't go to the TV ever. They want a journal. They want the materials that go with journaling. They might write. If you look at my journals, you'll find grandchildren have grabbed the journals when they're sitting somewhere, and I have little messages in my own journals from their work.
Well, there's still the element of the cultural artifact with a book. It actually is a thing that you can keep and hold on to and bend and fold and make notes on, all of which, of course, you can do on a pad of any kind. But this stays with you. It can be handed on. I mean, there is something, you know, I often think of the analogy, horses didn't go away just because they came up with an automobile. You know, in fact, we probably have more horses than ever. It's just that there is kind of a redefining of their role in our lives.
I think there's room for everything.
Yeah,
there really is. I mean, there's no reason why we can't have books and electronic books.
But do you think there's still going to be room for publishers? Because now that we're all we're going to pretty soon be self-publishing, and we've got that availability right now.
Right. I think a lot of people need to see when they're self-publishing, they need to remember to hire editors and hire an art director, because there is a huge difference when a book has that professional touch. And I think there are a lot of people who are selling, if you look at somebody like Amanda Hocking, who sold millions and millions of copies of her self-published novels online, that her books are very well designed. And I think that if her books weren't as well designed, that they would not be selling as well. I think that there is a lot to be said for the judging a book by its cover.
Well, there's a lot to be said for all the roles that we talked about and the legitimacy of them, you know, in the process of creating the book. You know, when we work with school children, we talk about the illustrator. We talk about the illustrator's voice that the illustrator brings to the book, you know. Mm-hmm. And
thank you, by the way.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, working in the small context that we do, we hire all the people, you know, who illustrate Jeanette's books. And so we want that. We want to make sure that the person who comes in has the same or feelings about what, you know, the book is going to do with children, and we want kids to know these roles. We want to know how specific. And in my own book, you know, I value when my editor calls up and says, "Bruce, what did you intend by?" I had said of the pirating of the land by the city of New York from mountain people when they. And I could use worse words than that, but he didn't know, you know. But he said to me, "Bruce, you used the word pirating. Did you mean that word?" And I said, "I picked the harshest word I thought you'd publish. You know, mm-hmm. if I had a better word and a meaner, nastier word, and you'd publish it, I would have used that." But
So I think they'll be around for a little while longer, and certainly they might change forms and formats. But I think that we're kind of attached to books, I think, no matter what.
But do you think that we're talking from our old person standpoint?
Well, thank you for...
I did say our.
Yes, that's very sweet of you to sort of include me in the same generation
well,
that you're in.
We're in the same generation.
Well, I think there's no doubt about it. We grew up with books. So, I mean, hardcover,
right.
You know, paper books. And so as quickly as we can retrofit ourselves, it's still not the same as growing up with it from day one.
Right.
You know, it's a different world for these generations that are coming up after us. It's
but the kids, what is the same is that if we took Maslow's hierarchy and took it, what are the needs of children? They haven't changed.
That's true.
So the question for us really is, you know, in the transformation that we're part of and that we're all working through, and that bedevils me because I'm an old guy and I can't adjust that fast. I mean, it's going faster than I can go.
Mm-hmm.
But I always come back to the reality of what are the needs of kids and how are we going to find it in books and literature and stories and myths and all the stuff that makes up what it is that we all in this room do.
And you know, we'll find it in great abundance tomorrow. I think that's a great place for us to stop and think about it and offer to all of our folks who will be coming to visit us tomorrow. It's going to be a wonderful, real treasure house, I think.
Celebration
of great work. I just want to thank all three of you for coming in. We could go on talking all night, obviously.
We will, but just off.
That's great.
Recording.
Bruce Hopkins, the book is When Foxes Wore Red Vests, and Katie Davis, and the book that you have here, and all of these wonderful authors have more than just this one book. Little Chicken's Big Day. And, of course, our wonderful local girl, made very good, Teresa Moran, teacher.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank
you
all so much.
Thank you so very, very much.
Yeah, and I'll see you all tomorrow.
Yay. Thank you, Hudson.